స్థితప్రజ్ఞస్య కా భాష సమాధిస్థస్య కేశవ స్థితధి కిం ప్రభాషేత కిం ఆసీత వ్రజేత కిం. అర్జున సెడ్, ఓ కృష్ణ, వాట్ ఆర్ ది సిమ్టమ్స్ ఆఫ్ వన్ హూస్ కాన్షియస్నెస్ ఇస్ దస్ మర్జ్డ్ ఇన్ ట్రాన్సెండెన్స్? హౌ డస్ హీ స్పీక్ అండ్ వాట్ ఈస్ హిస్ లాంగ్వేజ్? హౌ డస్ హీ సిట్ అండ్ హౌ డస్ హీ వాక్? I have in my office, I work for Cisco, I have my own desk. We are allowed to keep whatever, you know, fancy things we can. So I kept a book table, Srila Prabhupada's books, you know, displayed. And one colleague of mine, he's an Indian, he came and, you know, took Isha Upanishad. So then after a few days, he came back and he said, why do you guys read, you know, Isha Upanishad with translation, you know, with, you know, interpretation? You know, you should read as it is, you know, you just read the sloka and just read the translation. You understand clearly. Why do you want, you know, this commentary and, you know, detailed purport so big? You don't need all this. I have one audio version I can give you. Listen to it, very nice. So he was saying, so the Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. And it is there here and it is there also. There are a lot of, you know, apparently contradictory statements in Isha Upanishad. So he was saying, unnecessarily, you know, we are complicating things. It is not so difficult. You don't need to, you know, understand by him, by Prabhupada. You can understand by your own. See, I am not different from you because I am here and you are there. I am there also in you. I am here within me and I am there here within you also. He is saying all kinds of these things. Oh, you mean I am here? You are nothing but me also and you are nothing but you also. What do you mean? He said, no, that's what it says. The atom, it's there here and it's there also. You cannot say it is there only on one place. It is there everywhere simultaneously. It's like he was concocting his own, you know, philosophy based on what he read in the Isha Upanishad. Then I said, if I were you, then why do you not take care of my family? Why you only take care of your family? No, that is different. That is different. This is different. This is theory and that is practical. You are saying all kinds of things. And so I had chat for some time and it was obvious that he was, you know, Mayavadi and he was following his own commentary on these books and he was saying, oh, no, you should not. But still, he was, he took the books, so he got some good Sukruti. So he might one day come back. I encountered a lot of people like this. Even last week, a couple of weeks back, I was distributing books in Fremont Hindu Temple. One person, when I was approaching him with Bhagavad Gita, he said, no, I don't need to learn all these things. Why do you want me to, you know, force me to, you know, learn all these things? I am here, you are in me, I am in you. I did not understand what he meant. What do you mean? You are in me, I am in you, what do you mean? He was saying, oh, yeah, that's what, the soul is everywhere. I am in you, you are in me. He didn't expound on what he meant by this great, you know, sutra. So you meet all kinds of people who have their own mental concoction. So anyway, the point is, so Arjuna is asking the question, how can you determine a person who is fixed in transcendental consciousness or Krishna consciousness by looking at him, by judging his behavior, by seeing his activities? He's asking how we can determine that. Just to give you context, right? So this verse is the 54th verse of the second chapter, which is named as Contents of the Gita Summarized. So the Krishna sort of tried to put everything together in, you know, a set of 70 odd verses. So he tried his best to give in all sorts of possible ways in the summary of Bhagavad Gita. So the first 38 verses of second chapter, he talks about analytical study of the spirit soul, you know, how it is different from the body. It is also called Sankhya, which is different from the atheistic Sankhya. So he explains the philosophy in terms of what these, you know, gnanis, they speculate. This is not this, this is not this. This is also called neti neti. Neti means na iti. It is not this, it is not this. The way the gnanis, these people, Mayavadis, speculate, impersonalists, is, or even modern day philosophers who do not have the element of bhakti within them, they speculate everything based on neti neti. Oh, it is not this. Absolute truth cannot be material. So if they find something, they treat it as something not they can only describe based on negation. They cannot describe based on the positive attribute of that particular thing. So we for example you are living in an apartment and on your top there are someone else living and you hear a sound, big sound. So according to this philosophy, you can determine what is the source of sound by your own logical induction. Like you can say, okay, maybe some kid fell down. No, it cannot be because there is no kid living on the apartment. So based on the facts that you know, you tend to, you know, speculate on what could be the actual reason of that behind what is the sound that happening on top of your apartment. And so you can come to various kinds of, conclusions based on this theory that this is not, this is not. So these impersonalists, what they come to the conclusion is, something which is spiritual cannot be material. So when they see any form, they say it is material because it can be perceived by our material vision. And they say that anything which is spiritual has to be, this is not. Spirit is not the matter. So they conclude that the spirit has no form. So this is their philosophy. So this neti-neti concept is the only way they approach the absolute truth. That is why they cannot go beyond this impersonal form of the absolute, the impersonal Brahman. So interestingly, Krishna also takes to this approach, this neti-neti, in what to describe the spirit soul. If you see some verses, he says the spirit soul cannot be burnt by fire. It cannot be, you know, dried by wind. You know, it cannot be moistened by water. So he describes the spirit soul in terms of neti-neti philosophy. So it is not that these impersonalist philosophers, they got this from somewhere. It is they got from Krishna himself, but they are misusing it for their own end. So Krishna himself explains this concept in a way which is called anumanam, means logical induction. He's neti-neti, this is not the spirit soul, is not that. So we can understand what it is. It is beyond this, what we can perceive currently. So it's something beyond. But he does not give what it is exactly, positively, in those first 38 verses. So he only explains to that point. So one may argue Krishna himself, you know, is taking up this neti-neti philosophy. Why not I also do that? What is the problem in, following that path of my jnana or analytical study? So the point is, Lord Brahma also studied in detail, very deliberately, the whole Vedas for three times before coming to the conclusion, proper conclusion, that supreme Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and whatever he received is the absolute truth. So it is not that we cannot do this approach, the approach of Anumana. It is that we have to keep our end goal in mind, where we are approaching, where we are arriving based on what we are logically inducting from that. There is a verse in Bhagavatam which says, Shrutihi Pratyaksham Aitihyam Anumanam Chatushtayam. So there are four ways of Pramana. Pramana means what? You do Pramana in court. Pramana means ways of concluding things, concluding a truth or determining a truth. So Shrutihi Pratyaksham Aitihyam Anumanam Chatushtayam. Shruti means what? Hearing. Shruti, you hear from the Vedas. Shrutihi is hearing. Pratyaksham is direct experience. You see directly, then only I'll believe. You see a lot of people. I see directly, then only I'll believe. Shrutihi Pratyaksham Aitihyam. Aitihyam means traditional wisdom. So from our tradition, we get a lot of wisdom. Like, you know, our parents, they tell, you know, you don't sleep during sunset. Or 6 o'clock, you don't sleep, that's not a good time. Because it's coming from tradition. It's a wisdom is valuable, traditional wisdom is valuable. So aitihyam, anumanam. Then comes the logical induction. So you, by logic, you can induce. Based on the attributes of a particular object, you can, logically derive what it is and what it is not. So this is approved in Bhagavatam. This way of study, of analytical study, is approved in Bhagavatam. But the end goal should be to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as given by authorities. If your conclusion is different, then it is fruitless labor. Just like beating an empty husk of wheat, there is no end result for that. So Krishna explains this kind of philosophy in the first 38 verses. So we are in the 54th verse, And then from 39th, 40th verses, Krishna says, until this point, he says, so now that I have explained this philosophy of Sankhya, through analytical study you understand everything by neti neti, applying this principle. Now you try to understand, I'll try to explain in terms of buddhi yoga or devotional service. He says, so he explains, by doing this, you will be able to understand. Earlier he said, positive. He was not defining what is a positive attribute of the soul. He was not defining what it is. He was just saying, it is not this, it is not this. By doing this, you will not undergo this. Body is not perishable. But he was not dwelling more on the positive aspect of the soul. Now from this 40th verse, he gives some process by which you can actually understand this positive process. So that is a buddhi yoga that he gives. And he uses these words, by following this buddhi yoga, a person can remain in samadhi, or he can remain in divine consciousness, he can understand things as they are, he can remain transcendental to this flowery language of the Vedas. And he uses all these words, vyavasayatmika buddhi, so he has this steady intelligence. So he characterizes a person who is following this buddhi yoga by these various terms, like samadhi, vyavasayatmika buddhi, all these things. So Arjuna, so he hears obviously very carefully all these things Krishna tells, and so he now wants to understand, okay, now you said a person who has followed this buddhi yoga will be in samadhi, he has this vyavasayatmika buddhi, he is beyond this flowery language of the Vedas. Now I want to know how such a person sits. Does he sit like me, or does he sit like you, or how does he walk? Does he walk as if he's in a race, or does he walk very slowly? Or so he wants to find out what is the behavior of such a person who is fixed in transcendental consciousness. So he uses this word, kim asita vrajeta kim. See, the word asita means how does he sit. If you see English word sit, that came from this word actually. Asita, sit. Asinopa upasprisya. Means asina means asana. We sit on a asana, right? So that word came from asita. And philosophically, there is another meaning of that word, asita. Means how he is situated. You see? Asita means how does he sit? And another philosophical meaning is how he is situated. You see? So there is a lot of deep meaning when Arjuna asks that question. It may appear very simple. How does he sit? But it also means, how is he situated? What is his position? And vrajeta kim? Vrajeta kim? Kim asita? Vrajeta kim? Vrajeta means what? You walk. How does he walk? That is a plain meaning. And there is also another philosophical meaning for vrajeta, means how does he act? How does he walk, or how does he act? How is he situated, basically? So he wants to know, because he can identify who is a right person, who is a correct person or a bona fide person who is situated in this transcendental consciousness. Sitapragnasya ka bhasha, samadhisthasya keshava, sitadhi kim prabhasheta, kim asita vrajeta kim. So he wants to know how he is situated, how does he act, so we can determine anyone. This is a formula which Krishna gives now in the next verse, based on which we can apply on anyone and find out whether he is situated in transcendental Krishna consciousness. People may often ask this question. So there are, you see, a lot of devotees, or a lot of persons who is supposed to be in samadhi. So how do you know he is actually in samadhi? So the formula is given by Krishna in the next verse, which we will read now. So based on that formula, we can find out whether a person is actually situated in this sthita prajna or divine consciousness. So we'll see what Krishna says in the next verse. So far, any questions? Sri Bhagavan, I'll read by myself. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati Yada Kaman, Sarvan Pardhamano Gatan, Atmani Evatmana Tushtaha, Stita Pragnas Tadochate. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, now listen, this is a formula he gives. When a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. Purport. The Bhagavatam affirms that any person who is fully in Krishna consciousness or devotional service of the Lord has all the good qualities of the great sages, whereas a person who is not so transcendentally situated has no good qualifications because he is sure to be taking refuge in his own mental concoctions. Consequently, it is rightly said herein that one has to give up all kinds of sense desire manufactured by mental concoction. Artificially, such sense desires cannot be stopped. But if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, then automatically sense desires subside without extraneous efforts. Therefore, one has to engage himself in Krishna consciousness without hesitation, for this devotional service will instantly help one onto the platform of transcendental consciousness. The highly developed soul always remains satisfied in himself by realizing himself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. Such a transcendentally situated person has no sense desires resulting from petty materialism. Rather, he remains always happy in his natural position of eternally serving the Supreme Lord. So the formula is disclosed by Krishna. It is open for everyone to see. So he says, if a person is enacting an activity which is based on his own sense desire, born of mental concoction, then he is not in divine consciousness. You may ask, then why is it? How can you determine if it is based on sense gratification or, you know, it's not based on sense gratification? So the answer is, if one acts according to the instructions of Krishna 24 hours a day, even though it may be unpleasant to his own mind, or it may be unpleasant to his own desires, born out of his mind, still he is said to be in divine consciousness, because he is not acting based on the desires that his mind is generating. My mind generates all sorts of desires, like tomorrow I have to, you know, go to a movie, or, you know, I have to go to a friend's place for dinner. I have to invite so many social people. I have to increase my social network. These are all your mental concoctions based on, and the desires you produce are based on these mental concoctions. You think that by doing this, you'll be happy. But Krishna is saying, a person who has given up all varieties of these desires based on mental concoction, he does not say he gives up all desires, but he says all desires born of this mental concoction. So that means there are positive desires which are not born in his mind but are coming from Krishna or his pure representative. So Krishna says you have to take up that kind of desires in your endeavors and not the desires based on mental concoction. So when you find a person always engaged in such kind of activity which are based on the desires of Krishna or his pure representative rather than his own desires based on his own mental concoction, then, you know, Krishna is saying you can consider that person as having situated in divine consciousness. Okay, so this is the simple formula he gives. So now there is a verse given by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which can be used to draw very close parallels to this verse. He even more explicitly defines what this formula is. How do you determine a person or how to engage in pure devotional service and not be considered as acting under the desires for mental concoction? He says, Anya abhilashita sunyam jnana karma adi anavrutam. Anya abhilashita sunyam means, he says, he doesn't say abhilashita sunyam, anya abhilashita sunyam. So means any idea which is born out of your mental concoction, he leaves it. Anya abhilashita sunyam jnana karma adi anavrutam. And he also says jnana karma shunyam. He says jnana karma adi anavruta means there is no mental speculation in the jnana. There is jnana. We read the books, Prabhupada's books. There is still jnana. But there is no mental speculation of what that is supposed to mean. Like what my colleague was saying earlier. Jnana karma adi anavruta. Even the karma also. See, here Krishna doesn't say karma. If you read this verse, you may think, okay, a person apparently is acting in all sorts of ways only to please Krishna under the Krishna's instructions. He is in divine consciousness. But if you see internally, he may be internally thinking, okay, I am now doing this so that I may be elevated to a better position materially and maybe enjoy worldly comforts. Maybe that is his mentality, that is karmic mentality. So Krishna doesn't explicitly say that mentality, karma mentality. He only says when he acts apparently, not based on his own sense desire, but based on the desire of me or, my representative. But he doesn't explicitly use this word karma. But Srupa Goswami explicitly uses this word karma, even free from karmic, desires. Free from mental speculation, free from karmic desires. And then what? Jnana karma de anavrutam, anukulena krishnanusilanam. Anukulena krishnanusilanam means then even more explicitly defining. I have to cultivate this Krishna consciousness favorably, anukulya, not pratikulya. Anukulya means pratikula bhava rahita, means anukulya. Means you have to be free from the hatred to Krishna. That is pratikulya bhava rahita is anukulya. So you have to cultivate favorable devotional service, not like what Kamsa is cultivating. He was always conscious of Krishna, but that is pratikulya. We have to cultivate anukulya krishnanusilanam, means favorable devotional service. You have to love Krishna in a positive way. Since Krishna likes this, I engage this. So that is called anukulyana krishna anusilanam. So you follow the path chalked out by Krishna. So there is close parallels to this verse mentioned in the 55 verse of Bhagavad Gita, like prajahati yada kaman, and there is verse given by Rupa Goswami, which also says you have to act free from mental speculation and free from fruitive desire. Then when you act favorably in devotional service, then you will attain this divine consciousness. So how it is attained? Divine Krishna just says, okay, you attain this divine consciousness, or a person will be in this divine consciousness if he acts from desire, free from this mental concoction. But according to Rupa Goswami, you will attain this pure devotion if you act like this. And in Bhagavatam, there are a set of verses which talks about why, what is the science behind this? How by acting in anukulyana krishnanusilanam, by favorably cultivating devotional service, how you can be in divine consciousness? Sthita prajna. Srinvatam svakatha krishna punyasravana kirtana hridyantastohi abhadrani vidunoti suhrutsatam. Means srinvatam means anukulyana krishnanusilanam means is devotional service basically, favorable devotional service, which has 9 different elements to it. Hearing, chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, like that. There are 9 elements. And the first and foremost is hearing. So Krishna says, Srinvatam Svakata Krishna, Vyasadeva actually. Srinvatam Svakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Hridyantastohi Abhadrani Vidunoti Suhrutsatam. So if you hear carefully, Krishna enters the heart and purifies the heart of all contaminations. Vidunoti means cleanses. Cleanses is desire. Vidunoti Suhrutsatam, because he is the well-wisher of all the living entities. So by following this path given by Krishna and inexplicitly defined by Rupa Goswami, one can come to this platform of divine consciousness. And we can also, consider a person, whether he is in divine consciousness or not, based on application of this verse. Whether he is situated in divine consciousness always. So that is the formula given by Krishna in 55th verse, very important formula. And subsequent verses, Krishna also expounds on what are more characteristics of such a person. He's all right, he's Sthita Prajna, but not just Sthita Prajna, he also has a steady mind. Sthita Dhir Muni, he's a steady mind, he's not, sorrow when some unwanted thing happens, or he's not joyful when something which is materially good to him happens. He's situated equivalently. So he has a steady mind, he has perfect knowledge. He also explains, Krishna explains all these things. Such a person, he has steady mind, perfect knowledge, he is situated in perfect consciousness. And finally, he concludes it saying, he is having a steady intelligence. Now he uses this word, in text 61, he uses this word, steady intelligence, sthita prajna. So he concludes his explanation of the question posed by Arjuna in these verses. And if you go to 61st verse, he ends the answer there. It's on page 134. He says, Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matparaha vashehi yasyendriyani tasya prajna pratishthita. So Tani means, so I'll read the translation. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. So we have defined what a person with divine consciousness is. So such a man also has a steady intelligence. So if you see these words here, Tani means those senses. And Sarvani all, Samyamya, keeping under control. See, now here you have this important point. Yukta Asita. So the Arjuna was asking, how is he situated? You remember? Kim Asita Vrajayata Kim, 54th verse. Kim Asita Vrajayata Kim. Now Krishna, discloses that point. Yukta Asita. Kim Asita? Yukta Asita. He is engaged in what? In devotional service. Matparaha. In what? In relationship with me. So, he explains that concept or a question posed by Arjuna in a very logical way by concluding this. How is he situated? He is situated in devotional service. Yukta Asita. Kim Asita? Yukta Asita. So, that is... So that is a explanation given by Krishna on how a behavior of devotee should be, or how a person whose behavior can be understood as belonging to that of set of divine consciousness. So, any questions so far? Yes.
In the concluding verse. Krishna is using this word, one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. So he is using the word restrains. Restrains the senses, which is kind of implying that that person may not be really free from all sense desires. But he's able to restrain his senses. Otherwise, what is the question of restraining you? Mm-hmm. If he's already free, means there is no question of restraining there. So even the one who may have desires, but he's able to restrain his senses, keeping them under full control, and his consciousness is fixed upon him, fixed upon Krishna, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Is that correct understanding?
Yeah, that's true. So as long as one has this material body, his sense desires cannot be stopped, because the momentum of having this sense gratification has been going on. So the sense desires keep on generating, even though you have surrendered and want to, get rid of these things. Just like you pull a plug from electric outlet, still the fan keeps on going for some time. So it is not that automatically the senses will be under control. You have to, even though when you are practicing or in an advanced stage, as long as you have material body, the sense desires keep coming. So that's why he uses that word restraints. That's my understanding.
Under text 55, when you were discussing the formula that Krishna is giving, you said that one has to be move away from these desires that are coming out from mental concoction, but follow Krishna's desires,
right,
and those of his representative.
Yeah.
So how is one to know what are Krishna's desires? How would one know that?
It's given in Bhagavad Gita itself, the instructions of Krishna. He explains what is Buddhi Yoga in second chapter. Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Ekeha Kurunandana. And then he explains this Buddhi Yoga in subsequent verses, what this Buddhi Yoga is. And then he goes on explaining what actually this constitutes in 7th, 8th, 9th chapters, and in subsequent chapters also. So the desires of Krishna is well, spelled out in throughout Bhagavad Gita. For example, he says, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru Mam Evaishyasi Yuktvaivam Atmana Matparayanaha. That is his open desire for everyone, that everyone should follow this. And he has his desire spelled out even for people who cannot take to the highest stage. Like he says in 12th chapter, if you cannot do this, do this. If you cannot engage in pure devotional service, at least follow the regulations of, So these are all desires of Krishna. So he wants to cover everyone.
Yes, so what is being implied here is really the instructions that Krishna has given in the Bhagavad Gita of how he would like devotees to come to him, bow down to me and offer this to me and all that. It is not so much that he is internally communicating something to a devotee, such as, let's say, an internal voice of conscience or something, where Krishna is coming and saying, do this. It is not that. It is really these general instructions, if you will, that he has spelt out in Bhagavad Gita. Or do we have any scriptural evidence that Krishna from within also maybe may tell a devotee what to do or how to act?
Yeah, within also he tells in the 10.10 verse, we have this classic verse, Chatushloki, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. For one who is engaged Satata always in his devotional service, he gives intelligence from within. In other words, he talks to the devotee how to act or, you know, how to behave. So it's both. It's for people who are on external consciousness, they can know the desires of Krishna, as well as a person who is elevated, he can see what Krishna is actually telling him, which is confirmed in the scriptures as well as sadhus and guru. So it's both. His desires are well spread and available to everyone. Any other questions? So he has a question. Sure. Go ahead.
What Prabhuji was telling is very right, that Krishna has explained what are his desires through all the Bhagavad Gita. But mostly, like, since we are all sadhaka devotees, we come to know Krishna's desire when we follow one who is actually knows Krishna's heart. That is a spiritual master or a very senior devotees. When we follow, we know Krishna's heart.
Yeah.
So that is one. And internally, Krishna does reveal to everyone, was Prabhuji was telling, how Krishna reveals from inside. Krishna is always revealing, but in our stage, it's something like when we are not tuned into Paramatma. So right now, we are not tuned into Paramatma because there are so many desires in our heart, and we cannot hear Paramatma's voice as he is directing us. So by following the instructions of spiritual master and performing our devotional service strictly under his guidance, when our heart becomes cleansed, then we tune with the Paramatma, and we can know what he's telling from.
So just to elaborate on that initially it would be an external instruction that is coming.
Yeah.
Because as pointed out by Prabhuji here, one is not even advanced to the stage to be able to distinguish Krishna's inner voice from your own desire.
Right.
That may be a problem. Because really the question was this: how does one know that the internal instruction is Krishna's? Unless one is really highly purified, to be where you quoted that verse from the Bhagavatam, that when you hear his messages, he then clears things from the heart and purifies you.
Yeah.
So you may then be able to listen to his voice. Mm. But for a naive devotee or a new devotee, somebody starting, it would have to be some external instruction or instructions within the Bhagavad Gita to know what Krishna wants or what Krishna is saying,
right,
more so than internal.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you for that point. Interestingly, this verse, why Arjuna asks, what is his behavior? So if you see from a different perspective, there is a different perspective to this actually. So one is plainly to understand how to identify a pure devotee's behavior. How is he situated, what is his consciousness? Another angle to it is, by behavior, a devotee preaches the highest principle. So we have seen Prabhupada's explanation of preaching. So he was very, forceful. He was, very active, and he wanted his disciples to push on this movement. So when you say preaching, actually it is about actively talking or explaining to someone. He sometimes uses this word, parrot-like repetition. You just repeat like a parrot, doesn't matter. Even if you don't understand, whatever I tell, just read the purport. Or if you understand, that's even better. So he said, you should preach this, and Krishna says this, whoever preaches this, he is considered by me to the highest, to be most dear to me. So The preaching involves active talking or explaining or, you know, even distributing books. We are distributing books and Prabhupada is talking to them. So that is also preaching. So, because in 18th chapter we see, everyone, most of you are aware, Nacha tasman manushyesu kaschin me priyakrittamaha. Krishna says, whoever explains this, you know, philosophy or my knowledge to others is most dear to me. And Prabhupada says, Krishna usually doesn't want his knowledge or his confidential things to be explained to someone who doesn't believe or who is envious or who is not very inclined to devotional service. Krishna says in 3rd chapter also, leave them alone. But then Prabhupada goes on explains his internal mood as Lord Chaitanya. He wants to bring everyone in devotional service. That is why whoever actively goes and, you know, propagates this message on behalf of Krishna, he is most dear to Krishna. So now, to put this verse in that context, a person who is very proper in his behavior, he is sthita prajna, he is acting very properly in his behavior. So how is he preaching? You may ask that question. So I am not preaching. I am just performing my prescribed duties in a way Krishna wants me to. But I am not preaching. So the implicit message here is, a person who is acting so nicely as described by Krishna in these verses is also preaching. In fact, preaching is such a wide range of concept that anyone who is connected with a set of or a community which is having preaching as a main goal is also preaching. Once Prabhupada wrote a letter, a disciple wrote a letter to Prabhupada asking, I'm always engaged in, you know, building this temple. You know, that disciple was engaged in building a temple in India somewhere. So I'm always, you know, busy with, you know, these affairs of, you know, talking to the workers and managing that thing, this thing, you know, so many headaches. But I'm not preaching like what your, you know, Western disciples are doing, actively going out and distributing books, you know, holding seminars. So I'm not doing that. So I want to, you know, take a break and do that for some time. And you know what Prabhupada replies in his letter? Temple construction is also preaching. So there is lot of depth to what he says there, because you are engaged in a setup. The whole system is concentrated on, you know, spreading Krishna's glories. As a part of that system, you also get the benefit. Just like there may be a man of the match in a cricket match, but the credit goes to the whole team, because without the effort of other players, one cannot win a match by himself. So the preaching is such a, you know, important or such a dynamic phenomenon that if you are part of a setup which has preaching as the main goal, irrespective of what you are doing, you can also preach. So people who are, you know, making garlands, or then they may not get discouraged that I am not preaching. They are all preaching, who are actively campaigning for, you know, marketing, making CDs, you know, internally doing so many things. You know, it's all preaching. And more importantly, by behavior, you can preach the highest principle, even better than preaching, because a person who is distributing books can behave in a, you know, very uncharacteristic way of a devotee and turn the other side down or the expectations of other person. He can create a bad impression. But if you behave exemplarily in your profession or wherever you go, like a devotee, like what you are supposed to behave according to what Krishna says, you can create a lot of impression on a person who is a newcomer or who is new to Krishna consciousness. Oh, this person is, you know, a devotee. So you see how his behavior, he does everything perfectly, even though he does not actively preach. You see, the behavior of such a person establishes the true principles of religion. In fact, there is a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita which says, Dharma sthapana hetu sadhur vyavahara. It says, Dharma sthapana hetu means the principles of establishment of religion, dharma sthapana hetu, sadhur vyavahara, means sadhu means what? A pure devotee. It's a devotee is called sadhu. Vyavahara, behavior. A devotee's behavior establishes the true principles or essence of religion. So by behaving or by acting in a way which is ideal for you, for a devotee, even though he may not actively preach, or he may not be capable of doing it, or for some reason or the other, he is situated in such a position that he cannot preach actively, or say distribute books, or talk to people, or convert them. But by behaving in an exemplary way, he can also preach. He can actually establish the essence of true religion. Dharma sthapana, there is a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the completion of that, Dharma sthapana hetu sadhur vyavahara, puri goshanira e acharana se dharma sara. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to visit a brahmana in Mathura who happens to be a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So he is called Shanodiya Brahmana, means that there are kind of brahmanas in some part of northwest who are advisors to these lower class people, lower class vaishyas. So they are called Shanodiya Brahmanas, means they are not top first class brahmanas. People, sannyasis and higher elevated people, they don't take food cooked by them. So these are the Shanodiya Brahmanas. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to the house of Shanodiya Brahmana and asks him to, he can accept the, he says, I can accept the food or prasadam cooked by you. He says, no, I will not cook for you, but he says, I will accept the food cooked by you. Because you are a devotee of Madhavendra Puri, and Madhavendra Puri behavior established the true essence of religion. See here, he says, a devotee behavior establishes the true purpose of religious principles. The behavior of Madhavendra Puri Goswami is the essence of such religious principles. You see how a devotee's behavior, by just behaving properly as a devotee, how you can establish the true principles of religion is confirmed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's very important to act as the ideal devotee. In the purport to that, I'll read some excerpts. Prabhupada writes, Narottam Das Thakura says, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vakya Chittete Kariya Aikya. One should accept as one's guide the words of the sadhus, the shastra and the guru. A sadhu is a great personality like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The shastras are the injunctions of revealed scriptures, and the guru or spiritual master is one who confirms the scriptural injunctions. Accepting the guidance of these three is the actual way of following the great personalities, Mahajanas, for real advancement in life. A man covered by illusion cannot understand the proper way. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Dharma sthapana hetu sadhur vyavahara. The behavior of devotee is the criterion for all other behavior. So we have to be, when we behave, when some newcomer comes to temple, or our behavior will set the criteria for a person's impression. It will create an impression on a person's mind. What is the true religion? Oh, this is what is religion. So we have to be careful in our behavior. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself followed the devotional principles and taught others to follow them. Puri Goshanira, E Acharana, Sei Dharmasara. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally followed the behavior of Madhavendra Puri and advised others to follow his principles. So if you set your behavior according to what Krishna defines in this set of verses, then you can establish true principles of religion. And he also goes on to say a few more things. Srila Madhavendra Puri was a real Mahajana, but misguided people cannot distinguish from the real from the unreal. But a person who is awakened to Krishna consciousness can understand the real religious path chalked by the Lord and his pure devotees. Sri Madhavendra Puri was a real Mahajana because he understood the absolute truth properly and throughout his life behaved like a pure devotee. See, behavior is again being stressed. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved the method of Sri Madhavendra Puri. Therefore, although from the material viewpoint, this Shanodiya Brahmana was on a lower platform, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered him situated on the highest platform of self-realization, spiritual realization. So if you see, even Arjuna, after listening to whole Bhagavad Gita, hearing the whole Bhagavad Gita, he did not go actively preach, isn't it? He just behaved in a way befitting a devotee, isn't it? So that set the establishment of principles of religion for decades or for generations to follow. So the behavior of devotee can create a lot of impact on the generations together or in society in general. And there is another pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita wherein Mahaprabhu was so careful to see to it that his devotee's behavior in the highest ideal way. There was his devotee Chota Haridas, you may be knowing that pastime. And he was very particular about devotees who have accepted renounced order of life, sannyasa. So Chota Haridas happened to commit a very minor offense of going and talking to a woman for, getting some rice because he was ordered by someone else to get the rice. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he banished him from his association. He did not even want to see his face because he wanted to set the standard of behavior for a sannyasi in Krishna consciousness. Because the modern day sannyasis, what they have, they externally accept the sannyasa order, accept all the worship and accept all these, you know, free eatables from everyone, collect everything, and they maintain, you know, so many wives and engage in sense gratification. So if he had allowed Chota Haridas to escape with this kind of offense, he would have set a path, or people would have taken this as an opportunity to engage in all kinds of these things. So he wanted to say he wanted to establish principles of religion, dharma sthapana hetu, by sadhur vyavahara, by behavior, setting up the behavior of the devotees in a very exemplary way. There are some more purports given by, you know, Prabhupada for this pastime when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, rejected Chota Haridas. That goes like this. Lord Chaitanya was very particular, so particular about the behavior of an ideal devotee. He rejected Chota Haridas for a seemingly minor offense. Quotes, "I cannot tolerate seeing the face of a person who has accepted the renounced order of life, but who still talks intimately with a woman," unquote. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an ocean of mercy, is the ocean of mercy. Who can understand him? When he chastises his dear devotees, he certainly does so to re-establish the principles of religion or duty." See, dharma sthapana hetu, he wants to establish. Krishna also comes, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam saranam raja, and he comes for establishing the principles of religion. What is that verse? Dharma samsthapanadaya. So dharma sthapana hetu, dharma samsthapanadaya, is the same thing. So there are a lot of parallels in Bhagavad Gita and what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, but what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does is sometimes bewildering. See, in this example and in the purport, this is what Prabhupada writes. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura says in this connection that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the ocean of mercy, chastised Junior Haridasa, although Junior Haridasa was his dear devotee. To establish that one in devotional line, engaged in pure devotional service, should not be a hypocrite. So there is another lesson for devotees. One should not be a hypocrite. For a person engaged in devotional service in the renounced order, having intimate relationships with women is certainly hypocrisy. This chastisement was given to Junior Haridasa as an example to future Sahajiyas who might adopt the dress of the renounced order to imitate Rupa Goswami and other bona fide sannyasis but secretly have illicit connections with women. To teach such men, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised his dear devotee Haridas for a slight deviation from the regulative principles. And from this pastime, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura has, you know, elaborated a few lessons that we can learn. Some of the lessons that we can learn are, one is, by chastising Junior Haridasa, the Lord set the standard for acharyas, or the heads of institutions, propagating the Chaitanya cult, and for all actual devotees, even for devotees also. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to maintain the highest standard. This is one lesson from this pastime. Another lesson is, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed that a pure devotee should be simple and free from sinful activities, for thus one can be his bona fide servant. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught his followers how to observe the renounced order strictly. And another lesson from this pastime, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to prove that his devotees are exalted and that their character is ideal. He kindly accepts his faithful devotees and teaches them how much tribulation and disturbance can be produced by even a slight deviation from the strict principles of devotional service. It can create a lot of disturbance if a person who is very elevated in people's eyes, you know, falls down or have a deviation from his principles of devotional service. So this is importance of behavior of a devotee according to what Bhagavad Gita and Krishna says. And even in one of some interviews, with Prabhupada, there were some interviews that happened, you might have seen. A TV interviewer asks, how do you identify, you know, a true follower of Krishna consciousness movement? How do you know if he's a nice devotee? Then Prabhupada says, a devotee is a perfect gentleman. His behavior is perfect, as befitting a perfect gentleman, he says. So Prabhupada expected us to follow these principles, not just I understanding as a theory, but following practically so that we can be termed as a true gentleman. It's a very strong statement. If you see from other angle, it's not possible outside Krishna consciousness to be perfectly true or a real gentleman. Prabhupada so forcefully says in before the TV, a Krishna conscious man or a devotee is a perfect gentleman. And in one of the purports to Isopanishad mantra also, he says, let me read that one. He says, one should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give proper respect to others. There is a verse in Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, which talks about various attributes of knowledge. One should be, humble, one should not be pride, having pride, one should accept, acharya. And so as part of that, the first word, amanitvam, he translates as one should be a perfect gentleman and, respect others. So the point is, one should know what is the behavior of a true devotee, how should one be able to identify a devotee, as well as one should strive to become a devotee, because that is what establishes the true principles of religion. And that is how we can make most impact as a preacher. So one need not be discouraged that one is not a preacher because he doesn't have the skills to go out or, within himself, his own attributes, he can establish the principles of religion by preaching the highest ideal behavior. So any questions so far? Yes. Microphone.
This is goes into the, your what you said about preaching by example. I feel that one of the reasons we have such a good congregation of devotees is that our acharyas in our disciplic line, they had set a very good example of practicing such a devotional service of very high standard. So even though they are gone, they are still preaching because they have set that standard.
Right. Very nice example, yeah. He has a point.
Prabhu, on the comment on text 55, translation says, when someone who has his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone. And in the purport also, Prabhupada expands further. I think, is the understanding right that till the mind is purified, Prabhupada is asking, or the acharyas are asking, to we get into the association of devotees, to reach to that state of getting purity in thoughts, mind, so that, then you will have full satisfaction. Is that understanding?
Yeah,
it enables.
Yeah, that's true. So he explains this is the highest characteristic of a person, but there is a lot of you can expand that formula how it will actually lead to that stage. Initially, you start with hearing, Adav Shraddha, Tata Sadhu Sangha. You associate with devotees, then slowly you'll come to that point. Yeah, that's true.
I just had a question about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu getting upset over Haridas Jr. for having talked to a woman, and he had that criterion that he should not. So wouldn't that qualify as a very stringent criterion for practice of devotional service? Because there have been sadhus, who go for bhiksha from home to home, begging. And they would talk to the householder. It can be a man or a woman. And they would speak. It's not that because a woman appears at the door that he will shy away. He will still go for bhiksha. Yeah. So from that point of view, this it would seem that it stands out as a very stringent type of a expectation of behavior.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely is. It's in fact mentioned in one of the purports of Chaitanya Charitamrita that it's not a very great offense. It's negligible offense, actually. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does this for some reasons. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains 7 reasons why he does it. And also Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, who can understand the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? It's bewildering. So he does this to establish a lot of things so that only the acharyas can give us what is the exact spirit in which it is. It doesn't mean that you cannot even go and talk for necessary things to a woman, it has to be approved by your spiritual master and in line with Shastric injunctions. You cannot go and freely mix with women being in a spiritual, renounced order of life. There has to be a balance. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had no qualms about it. He was on the highest perfection. He was liberal. You see, he is Mahavadanya Avatar. He is the most magnanimous incarnation. Still, he was, when it comes to dealing with sannyasis, dealing with women, he was so strict. Just to draw some, observation from that.
I think as far as I understand about that story, there was, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, one person who was cooking the feast, he directed the sannyasi to go to this woman and pick up the offerings. So he could have sent somebody else, but he himself went. So I think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't like that.
So Sikhi Mahati's sister, actually. And the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is not that by talking to a woman, she had been talking to her also earlier, but it is the time he had a lusty desire to see that woman, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being as a super soul, he understood it within his heart that what is the intention of the desire. Not necessarily that you talk and you cannot talk to the woman like that, but the way you see, so momentarily he felt that he wants to enjoy her. And that is the one which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't like and didn't approve. Not necessarily that the talking of a woman, and because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, there is an example that there is a widow in Puri, he even used to mix, even though he was young, and she was young, but she used to talk and, having interactions with them in such a sannyasi etiquette. But the intent here was, she has a desire to enjoy momentarily, the lusty desires, and that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood within his heart, and that's the one he did chastisement. He committed suicide. Junior Haridas, he committed suicide in Prayag, and then he became his spiritual body. But some say that he came as a ghost to sing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he has his spiritual body to sing the glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like that.
Yeah, he was a singer for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and even after his disappearance, he used to sing for the pleasure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that he committed suicide. No one knew, actually. He left on his own in a morning, early morning, and people did not know where he went until after some time they went to Prayag and heard his voice, even though he did not have a body. Then they concluded that he might have become a ghost, but Swarup Damodar said no, he did not become ghost, but this is what happened. So yeah, so even, Prabhupada, whenever we have doubt, we refer to the folio, isn't it? Veda base. Oh, this is what Prabhupada did. Oh, this is how he behaved. This is how he... So it sets an, essence of how one should act, or true religion, what one should behave, how one should act according to religious principles.
Any other questions for Kishore Prabhu? If not, well, thank you very much for the Krishna Katha.